We have learned so much about the Civil War era through letters. Now we know even more thanks to a new book published by the Missouri History Museum Press. It gives us a detailed look at love, courtship, and war. It's comprised of 160 letters from Union Army Captain James Love to his fiancée, Molly Wilson. It's titled, My Dear Molly, Civil War Letters of Captain James Love, edited by M.E. Molly Codner. We don't want to confuse people with all these Mollies.
That's
all
right.
Of a sudden.
Right.
Molly's the associate archivist at the museum. She joins me in studio. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I guess it's a labor of love in more ways than one,
it
correct?
It is. Yeah. It is.
These are love letters in every sense of the word, aren't they?
That's true. That's true. I think the important thing about this book is that it's a history of the Civil War, and it's a military story, but it's also a love story. And those two things kind of unfold throughout the course of the letters.
Tell us a little something about the principals, the captain and his lady.
So James Love, they were both born in Northern Ireland. He was born in 1830, and she was born in 1833. They both separately came to St. Louis around 1849 or 1850. He lived kind of a few blocks east of where Crown Candy Kitchen is today, and she lived in the area where the convention center is. So they met sometime in the late 1850s. Her brother was married to his cousin. I don't know exactly how they met because we don't have her letters, which is an important thing to remember.
I want to get to that.
We
a
only
bit later.
Have yeah. his letters. But so they met in the late 1850s, fell in love, and got engaged just before the war started, I think. And the engagement was a secret. They kept it a secret from her family for reasons that I don't know exactly why. But it kind of unfolds through the course of the letters.
How ordinary were they? They were, weren't they?
They were extremely ordinary. And in fact, it's two people that you would never would have heard of for any reason, except for the fact that he left behind this fantastic collection of letters.
And where were they discovered?
The letters, so they were given to the Missouri History Museum in the 1940s and 1960s we got them from their descendants. And they've always been part of our collections. I started working with them when I was an intern in the late 90s. And I just discovered really how wonderful the story is, I would say.
One of the things that struck me, were there times when he was quite affectionate in the way he would address her, and other times not so much so? He would sign off by saying love and love and love,
right.
And others sincerely.
Right.
Wonder what that's
true.
All about.
That's true. I don't know. I think it was just a whole different way of, you know, it was a relationship in the mid-19th century. It was I think he was still being respectful of her, I guess, and respectful of where their relationship stood.
It really is a shame that we don't have any of her letters to him, because what we know about her, we have to kind of deduce through some of the things that he says.
That's right.
What do we know about her, looking at it that way?
Very little, honestly. I know that her father died before they came here from Ireland. She came here with her mother and an aunt and several of her siblings. First of all, I will say, based on his comments about her letters and responses to what she was writing to him, I think she had a good sense of humor. I know in one of the letters she was kidding him about how the Prince of Wales at that time was getting married, and it kind of seemed like she was saying, oh, she would want to marry someone like the Prince of Wales. I know that she was, the only thing I know for sure is that she was a fervent prohibitionist, and he makes references several times to the fact that he was not drinking any of the whiskey that was in camp. I don't know if I totally believe that, yeah. But
in terms of the physical shape that these letters were in, I know a lot of them he writes that he had written them in the rain, or they had been trekking through the mud, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. What kind of shape were the letters
in? They're
in
very good shape.
Yeah.
They're in very good shape. I mean, and they've lasted 150 plus years.
That's a little bit of a surprise, actually, that they would hold up so well. The one part of the story that is also fascinating to me is the fact that, I guess it was the last 17 months of the Civil War, he was sitting it out in a Confederate prison.
That's right. He was captured. He was wounded in the Battle of Chickamauga in September of 1863 and was taken prisoner at that time and held prisoner for really the rest of the war, the rest of the letters until February of 1865. And that was, I would say, pretty unusual. His only two options to get out of prison were exchange, being exchanged.
Prisoner exchange.
But general exchanges had stopped by that time before he was even taken prisoner. And for whatever reason, nobody was arranging a special exchange for him. He did try to escape several times and did. He was eventually successful,
And that is an interesting part of the story as well.
That's right.
coming back to St. Louis.
Yes.
You have some excerpts from some of the letters. I'd like to give our listeners a taste, if you will, or a listen to the language and some of the things. Pick out a couple that you like the best, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, one of my favorite ones is actually the one that he wrote first. So he left on June 15th of 1861, and the next day he wrote this letter. On board steamer D.A. January, Missouri River, June 16th, 1861. My dear Molly, we are at present near St. Charles and en route for Jefferson City. I shall write you again from there. At present, I have only time to say how much I love you. All my hopes of heaven and earth depend on you. I have tried to act through life so that neither my own or my adopted country need be ashamed of me. I have a double incentive now, and with a little advice from you, I will try to never give you cause to blush for me. I hope and pray to return safe and soon. Believe me ever truly yours in thought, word, and deed, James E. Love.
I'll bet that caused her heart to flutter just a little bit. That's fairly intense there. Now, that's what I would love to see the response to.
And then I also, another one that I always read that kind of shows the main strands, the military strand and the love story, is also from 1861 when he was getting ready to go out on what he thought would be a dangerous expedition. And he wrote, Lexington, 11 p.m., August 6th, 1861. My dear Molly, we start in an hour on a dangerous expedition, and although I believe I have a charmed life as far as secession bullets are concerned, yet should I be wounded, I could not forgive myself if I did not write a line now. Our secesh friends here are trying to enclose us in a net, so that when we wish to go down in a few days when our time is up and reinforcements have come in, we may get caught. We go tonight to catch them napping if we can, and so destroy the net and the fishers who manage it. I know you wish us Godspeed and pray for us nightly, but even with a brilliant victory, some few lives may and will be lost. I hope to give a good account of myself as heretofore and refer to Captain Hurd and my friends in Company D. I leave what will have to do for a will in my portmanteau. And now, my dear, dear girl, I am with kindest love to yourself and all, yours sincerely, James E. Love. 1,000 kisses.
We have to keep in mind that that letter was written just 4 months after the start of the war. So you can detect the apprehension and the uncertainty
right.
as to what could possibly lie ahead because
right.
obviously no one would know, but the war wasn't even fully established
right.
at this point.
And, well, go ahead.
No, if it finished, your thoughts.
I was just going to say that I think this is one of the interesting letters just to imagine how Molly must have felt when she received it, just because this was the only way she knew what was happening to him. And to receive this letter, and maybe it would take a month for the next letter to come, to wonder what had happened to him after that.
That's an experience that so many women and spouses have undergone
right.
in the century and a half since then, certainly.
Right.
Molly, what did we learn about the war, do you think, through these letters? Anything that we might not have known or clarified, perhaps?
I don't know about that. The one thing I think is interesting is that it focuses, it's the war in what's called the Western theater, the war in our area. Mm-hmm. So I think it doesn't focus on, it's not Gettysburg and Antietam. It was going, what was going on near here. But I think that it also shows what it was like to fight in the war. I mean, these are not a summary of the events of a battle or the numbers of how many people were wounded in a battle. It is the words and thoughts and emotions of a person, just an everyday person who was there.
Is there much discussion from him about battles themselves?
Yeah, there are. He was in three battles. He was at his first battle was in at Perryville, Kentucky in October of 1862. And I actually, he writes towards the end, you know, he describes the whole battle. And then at the end, he says, death in a thousand shapes and worse than death to many. There was definitely a sense that being wounded was a bit far worse in some cases than dying. He was in the area of the Battle of Stones River in December to January from 1862 to 1863, and describes that. And then after the Battle of Chickamauga, when he was wounded, he actually wrote a letter from, you know, the cornfield where he was laying after being wounded and taken prisoner. But, you know, and he also explains it's not just the battles, it's the marches and the hardships of the marches and the hardships of moving these wagons full of supplies. It's just every aspect of the war. And sometimes the boredom of what was going on in camp life when they weren't doing anything.
The travel is what I took away from it. I haven't had a chance to read it all, but I read many of the letters. And, it, you know, I have these visual images of these soldiers in heavy uniforms. They were woolen uniforms,
right.
And we know what summers are like around here.
Right.
But of trekking through the mud and, you know, the rain and all the discomforts that, that it had, just gave me a pretty interesting picture of what it must have been like,
right.
Although we could never know.
Right.
He, I guess he was a pretty good soldier.
Yeah, I would say he was a good soldier.
He was not shy about letting her know when he was complimented for one thing or another. You're laughing, but he really was quite immodest, I thought.
It's true. It's true. I think he was trying to, you know, I think one of the things is that he was always trying to be worthy of her love. So maybe that's why he stressed those points.
Well, men have been known to do that from
right.
from time to time. How about another reading from you? What else have you got that will give us another insight?
I'll read the letter that he wrote to her after being wounded. He said, September 23rd, 1863, Molly dear, I am laying out in a cotton field and doing well. I am at present within Bragg's lines, but hope to be exchanged at once, as thousands of others are today and yesterday. We have just got some rations sent by Rosecrans, the first since the fight. When I closed this note, we started and marched rapidly 8 miles or more, and all at once got into a most terrific fight. I was under fire several hours and rallied the men of my company and of others several times. I brought the flag back more than once when we were driven, but it was of no avail. The enemy overpowered us and drove us back. At the crisis, I fell headlong among them, shot through the thigh in two places, and my clothes riddled besides. I am doing well, and I am, I assure you, in good spirits and suffered no pain, neither when wounded or since. I am weak as it bled freely, and the sinews are cut and bone jarred very much. I expect to forward this from Chattanooga. Will write whenever I can. Believe me, I will suffer less from pain than you will from pity. Yours ever, love.
You have a nice smile on your face right now. You know, another thought that I had in reading these letters is the difficulty in simply writing them. I mean, what implement did he use? A pencil? A pen?
I think paper? In some he used pencil, in some he used pen. He got paper. I mean, he mentioned several times running out of paper. And one, he apologized for writing it on, as he called, he referred to the Confederates as secesh, short version of secessionist. So he apologized for writing on secesh paper, but that's all he could find.
And yet many of the letters were quite lengthy.
That's true. That's true.
So he had some time on his hands.
He did. He also mentions some of them he was sitting under a wagon or on the platform at a train depot. He was really writing them. One, he said he was sitting down and had to hold the paper on his knee. So he was really committed to writing these letters.
I want to be clear on one thing. While he was a prisoner for all those months, he was writing during this time. Mm-hmm. It was just the exchange you mentioned earlier that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, he was writing letters during that whole time.
And in terms of his description of what life was like in the prison, what did he have to say?
He was in prisons for officers. He was an officer. He was still in prison, but they were better than, you know, Andersonville and other prisons for enlisted men. A lot of them he describes, in some of them he talks about how he had actually gained weight while he was in prison.
Huh.
And some of them they had dances and talks and, you know, he was still in prison for a long time, but it wasn't as horrible as other prisons. Certainly.
And his time starts to get away from us here. He did escape, and he had about, 350 miles or so to cover to get back?
He got into Union lines, and in March of 1865, got back to St. Louis and married Molly in May of 1865.
That's where I want to go, because the story does have a happy ending.
And
that's
right.
They lived a long and happy life together. But there again, we don't know a whole heck of a lot about that.
No, I don't. And in fact, I don't have anything that he wrote. I know what they were, where they lived and what they were, his jobs were based on the census and city directories. But I don't have anything that either of them wrote after the war.
As the editor and as the researcher on this, it must have driven you nuts to just be able to go so far and not take it beyond that.
It does. It does. But, he was married to the love of his life, and they had 4 children. And, you know, he worked just as a clerk and bookkeeper in various different businesses in St. Louis. I hope he had a happy life. It seemed like he got everything he wanted.
How old was he when he died?
He was 75, and right. She lived to the age of 90. So she actually lived
well into the next century.
And she died in 1924. Yeah. So,
a question that I often ask to someone like yourself, who spent so much time with people that they couldn't know, is: do you like him?
I do. I do like him. I've come to know him so well over it's kind of the end of this project. I kind of do miss reading about him every day. But yes, I do like him. I think he had a great sense of humor and just deeply devoted to this country. I mean, he enlisted in the Civil War after only being here for 11 years. I think that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, a lot of the men who came from Europe, particularly the Germans, were very, very, very heavily involved.
That's true.
And about her, we don't know quite so much. But what about her? Do you think you would have liked her?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I think I definitely would have liked her.
Do we have any indication to this day whether any of the progeny are around today?
They are around. They are not in St. Louis. Uh-huh. But I actually have been in touch with several of their descendants now, great-great-grandchildren and some great-great-great-grandchildren. And they gave me some pictures to use in the book. They are very excited about this project and the book and that the letters are being shared. They're kind of spread out all over the country now.
After spending all this time doing work on the book, what is your takeaway from it? What did you come out of it with?
Oh, that's a great question. Honestly, just an appreciation for Civil War history. Honestly, I was a 20th century historian as an undergraduate, and I think that it just – not only these letters, but other archival collections. And they just, it's a completely different way to learn history. And I just think it's the most. It's just a great way to learn history. And
Missouri Civil War history is very rich. More battles fought in Missouri than any place
else.
That's
right. And for the I'll say for his first few months of his service, he was going up and down the Missouri River on steamboats, and it is a great snapshot of what life was like in Missouri.
That's a great book. And here it is, My Dear Molly, War Letters. Molly Codner, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much.
Great talking to you. Tomorrow on Cityscape, we'll talk about Shakespeare Festival St. Louis's production of the rarely performed Antony and Cleopatra. We'll also hear about the return of the Chinese Lantern Festival at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Monday on this program, we'll have a holiday rebroadcast of my conversation with former DEA agent Ed Follis. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. The program is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, production assistants from Evita Caldwell, Aaron Dorr, Katie Cook, and Spencer Reed, executive producers Robert Peterson. Today we say goodbye and thanks to our intern, Katie Cook. Wish her farewell and well in her endeavors. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.